One guest on the line. Another one looks like he's getting ready to join us here as well. So this is going to be a very exciting second hour here. Many thanks to the FDH New York Bureau for helping to put this one together. The guest that we have coming on line one is the managing editor of KFFL.com, and I believe he was the first person that we confirmed with for being able to come on for this thing here. So very fitting to be able to bring him on. Corey Benigni from KFFL.com. So, Corey, welcome to the FDH Lounge and the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider. Sir, it's good to have you as part of the summit.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on. On line two, we have on a gentleman who actually, I believe, is calling us from our local area tonight. Coincidence of all coincidences here. He's out there. He's on the road. He's going to training camps for a fleeting moment. We thought that the schedules might work such that he might be able to join us here tonight because he's been covering, of all teams from a fantasy concept, as preposterous as it might sound, our Cleveland Browns here in the flagship city for the Sports Talk Network. So Mike Harmon, the fantasy guru at FoxSports.com, with us on line two from the local area. Nice to have you on, Mike.
Hey, pleasure to be on. Fun and exciting practice today. A lot of situational stuff. And now I begin the nine-hour journey to Albany, New York.
The nine-hour journey, huh?
Well, you know, loading up in the rented Malibu. I've got a cooler full of Red Bull Sugar Frees, and we're ready to go.
Well, you know, that's what you need for a road trip of that nature. Unfortunately, as I see here, as I'm trying to juggle, we lost Corey on line one. So, Corey, I apologize. We need to have you give a call back in. Hopefully that's Corey on line one, hopefully rejoining us right now. That was my bad here. It always ends up being some juggling when it comes to a situation like this. On line four with us here, this is going to be very interesting having on this gentleman because he has a background where he was first known, I think, to the general public via the program The Apprentice. And he has since gone on to become the CEO of RotoHog. I speak, of course, of Kelly Perdue. So, Kelly, welcome. It's nice to have you as a part of our summit here tonight.
Hey, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and we appear to be having some issues here with the phone. I'm going to try and lock back in on line one. Corey on line one. Hopefully this does not lose you on line four here, Kelly. Hopefully we can do both of these at the same time. But Corey, we apologize for the issue here with the phones. Glad to have you back in. Thank you so much for calling back in.
Hey, no problem.
All right, so we got both of you guys on. Hopefully, Mike Harmon getting set to rejoin us. Hopefully, from on line two there, I believe. So, all right, let's try this again here. Mike Harmon on line two. Okay,
there I am.
All right, apologize for that. I think we got all of you gentlemen on. Everything's working okay right now. So the way that we'll just do this, any of you guys, just you know, give a heads up anytime you need to check out, if you need to. You're welcome to be on for the entire hour. It's up to you guys. It's a pleasure to have you on. I just kind of want to go around the horn asking some different questions on different topics. We're also going to be joined, and I know this, from 8:15 to about 8:30 Eastern time by Dave Richard from Fantasy Football, the fantasy football writer at CBSSports.com. So I'll be talking to him as well during that time. So just in terms of going around the horn, looking at things here, we'll start on line one with Corey, and just keep it easier for me going to lines one, two, and four respectively here. So in terms of the overall state of the fantasy sports industry, fantasy football, I think, clearly being the flagship. You know, we're a couple months away from the end of the decade here, and it always an interesting time to take a look backwards here. So the question that I'll put to all three of you guys, Corey, you being the first one here, is in this first full decade of internet sports participation with the fantasy industry here. This is the first decade that we've gone through start to finish where the internet's played a role in it, whether it be major websites hosting fantasy games, whether it be major websites dispensing information and draft boards and everything like that. Talk about how far you think we've come in that last decade since 2000 and what some of the things might be on the horizon, the way that it's evolving with some of the high-stakes games and some of the other things out there. So, Corey, we'll start with you.
Well, the explosion is undeniable. I mean, obviously, the internet has made this such an easy and readily available hobby for people. As far as the last Fantasy Trade Conference goes, they were saying that this is the first year that we've actually hit a plateau in terms of the fantasy growth. I mean, you're looking at roughly 110 companies out there and about almost 27 million adult Americans that play. You know, somewhere at some point it has to level off, and I think we've seen that. Whether or not that's part of the economy is, you know, anybody's guess right there. But I don't know that it'll ever completely regress from where we've gone to. I think you will see some kind of plateau for the next year or so, and then it will slowly start building its way up upon people finding more discretionary income.
Yeah, it makes sense that the economy would have a role to play in that. No question about it. Mike, let's move to you. As far as where the industry has come over the course of the last couple of years, even the last decade, in terms of where it's going, what are you seeing from your perch at FoxSports.com?
Well, sure. I actually started the industry right at the beginning of the decade, so it's been interesting to watch the evolution, you know, from trying to monetize through specialized things when I was at Yahoo, trying to, you know, figure out how to monetize something like a stat tracker, whereas now live scoring is a standard. It's free everywhere, and it's all about finding sponsors and advertisers to pick up the slack, and that's it. You know, we're looking at the next evolution, how to do things for mobile phones, involving Twitter and Facebook, quick and easy apps. You know, at Fox Sports, we launched a couple of games that are on Facebook, quick and easy hits, for folks to play, you know, in leagues with their friends on a larger scale and a larger competition. So I think that's the evolution, and then eventually figuring out how to make those live in-game substitutions happen that I know everybody's so keen to do. It's just a function of getting the speed and the technology to get there.
What's interesting, as I turn the question to our third guest here, Kelly Perdue of RotoHog, is that there's one area in particular that jumps out at me in posing the question to you, Kelly, that being customization. That seems to be what your company's putting a lot of chips on moving forward here. So how do you see the evolution of the industry and the customization with the games and the directions that that might take in terms of trying to draw new people into this hobby?
Well, I think you hit on a great point that there is, in my mind, going to be a significant number of increase in people that are playing from a more casual standpoint. So if you're going to use a league manager or a salary cap as the number to get to 27 million in terms of who's playing fantasy and how you define it, yeah, it'll probably plateau. But if you look at all the different types of more casual environments where people who 5 years ago wouldn't have considered themselves playing fantasy, I think you're going to see that grow considerably. And yes, at RotoHog, we do provide a seamless, customizable, if you will, configuration for many of our clients, whether it's Sporting News, Pro Football Weekly, NBA.com, really giving them what they want so that they can take their assets and integrate them into the games to give the end user a very customized experience.
Okay, yeah, I can see where that would be something that would be something that would be appealing to people, particularly those who've been in leagues under tried and tested systems that perhaps they might be tiring a little bit of here. You know, innovation certainly looks like it's going to play a part moving forward in this business. I'd like to ask all of you as the next question here, again, now starting with you, Corey, as far as the hierarchy of this business, speaking in a sports sense here, you know, you have football that's at the top of the mountain here. You have baseball, which really appeals to the hardcores. You have other sports appealing on niche-type bases here. Basketball and NASCAR certainly have great followings. Hockey, especially in certain geographic areas, and certainly north of the border here. Are there any things that you would see in the next couple of years, Corey, that might sort of change this dynamic at all? Do you think we're basically locked into where we've been for the last 10 or 15 years, ever since football really passed baseball? Is there anything that could emerge potentially as a greater area for fantasy sports participation? And something we work on at FantasyDraftHelp.com, sometimes with niche sports. Do you see any sports that haven't been big traditional fantasy sports possibly stepping up in that way? Start with you, Corey.
Well, I think it's interesting because football is such a casual thing. It's a weekly thing. You can have, you know, a weekly lineup and set it and forget it mentality. You know, some people don't even bother with the waiver wire, things like that, whereas baseball in general is more of a daily, you know, sport. It's more of something that you got to keep on top of.
I think NASCAR is actually going to be pretty huge. The one thing that we've dealt with NASCAR here for a couple of years at KFFL, and the one thing that I've noticed is that there isn't a lot of excitement to come back to your league and check up on it regularly, because for the most part you start three or four drivers, you have one or two reserve drivers, and it's not like it's an every week thing where, you know, you're constantly in there checking out which drivers you can add and drop like you would in football or baseball, just because there isn't that sheer, you know, there just isn't that kind of volume of the waiver wire to be dealing with. But as far as the niche sites or niche you know, sports go, I think that you could see an effort from golf coming forward. You know, the PGA is pretty good at marketing themselves, and they obviously have a pretty prominent face with Tiger Woods. And I think if there's some way that they can come up with making it more exciting for the average golfer and then translate that over into the digital world, I think you could see a pretty big explosion with golf.
That is really interesting that you mentioned that, because we've actually kind of dabbled with that a little bit at FantasyDraftHelp.com. And, you know, I think there are some fun – we've tried to design some game systems. I think there are some fun ways to go about it. It's very interesting also. We had a vote on the show in a couple weeks ago for greatest fantasy sports out there. Most people voted for football. Some voted for baseball. The only sport aside from that that received a vote was golf. So, yeah, maybe there is that kind of an upside. Mike, putting the question to you here, is there anything that you see in the years to come possibly changing that dynamic? I know when we had you on the show previously, you and I talked a lot of fantasy baseball. That's kind of ensconced, it seems to most people, at least maybe like number two. That and football have kind of been like ships passing in the night ever since football took over, whenever it would be in the mid-90s or so. Is there anything that you would see, Mike, that could change this overall hierarchical status of the industry as far as these sports go in the years to come?
Well, I think, you know, as we see more breakout games off streaks and, you know, hitting contests, what have you, for baseball, you might see a little more traction back there. But I think the one area, I mean, at least with the proliferation of bars that I'm seeing carrying worldwide soccer games, I think there might be inroads there to be made to grab the world audience and build a bigger base at home. Because, I mean, just in the Los Angeles area, which doesn't really have a home team other than, I guess, USC is the pro team on the American football side of things, and, you know, Beckham giving a little bit of interest with the Galaxy, you know, you see a lot more bars, you know, advertising, hey, come in at, you know, 10 o'clock at night, we're going to show the feed from this, that, or the other. So I think you might be a little bit of a way to grab onto that audience. But that would be the only thing I think it could have greater growth, because golf, I think, runs into the same thing that NASCAR does, where you have to try to figure out how to best balance things so people don't get to set Tiger Woods in their lineup and just leave him there forever. So that's one of the challenges with that type of game.
That's a great point on globalization. I mean, it's more than a cliche, I think, that the world is getting smaller every day here. Yeah, the things that are big overseas, you could see migrating to maybe large niche audiences in this country. That's an interesting point. Kelly, as we turn to you, again, I would suspect that, you know, your answer may have something to do, again, potentially with innovation and different forms that this might take, much like what we talked about with you with the last answer, because, again, I could see where that could potentially be a game changer, and places like RotoHog might be at the center of that as far as being able to look at some of these sports in a new and reconfigured kind of a way.
Yeah, absolutely. The comments about style are very important, as you can get users to adopt different styles of games that make the ease of use actually, as you mentioned, you know, football's pretty easy. You can set it and forget it and get one fix, you know, on one day. If you can create and style games that allow that same type of user behavior, you can reach a larger audience. Also agree with soccer can be massive, especially going into a World Cup next year. I believe at some point in time, it's going to usurp football. Two other ones. NCAA, I think, as CBS has kind of stuck their toe in the water with it this season and will continue to do it this year. I think more and more people are excited about talk about the passion of associated alma maters for college. It could easily match that of their fans of the NFL team.
Well,
and then the largest sport, participant sport in the world, fishing. I know it sounds funny, but there's some staggering not only participant interest in fishing, but the number one sponsored sport in the world, too, in terms of total dollars.
Yeah, I've seen that, where the bass fishing circuit's really been picking up in the last year or so. We've even looked at potentially trying to pick up some coverage of it. I have to tell you, it's very timely, Kelly, more than you could possibly know, to have mentioned college fantasy football, because the fourth guest on our roundtable is now joining us. He can only stick around for a limited period of time. We'll get his answer to this question, and I'm hoping at least two more questions after this. We have coming on with us here Dave Richard, fantasy football writer at CBSSports.com. So our first question to him will be the one that we've just posed to the rest of the panel, that being the sense of where this industry might be going in the overall sense of football's number one, then you've got baseball, then you've got some of these other ones here. What could come along to possibly change that? Sports that maybe could make a move up the ladder here. One would think fantasy football for college could be a part of that. And, of course, your employer, Dave, is a big part of that. So welcome to the program, and love to get your thoughts on that subject.
Good evening, Rick. I can barely hear you on my phone. I think you just asked me about the college fantasy football.
Yes.
Well, I don't really cover college fantasy football, but what I can tell you is that it's a very, very popular area on our site. It's getting bigger and bigger. We recently acquired the rights to use individual players. Previously, we only had team designations. For example, if you wanted Tim Tebow, you could only designate or you could only start the Florida team quarterback for him. Or if you wanted a certain running back, say you wanted C.J. Spiller from Clemson, you'd actually have to start all of the Clemson running backs on your team. Now it's individualized. It's much more fun, and people are very passionate about it. It's very exciting.
Oh, it really is. It's an interesting element that's been added to this business, and it'll be good to see where that goes. So we now have our full contingent of guests on. This is great. We have on Corey Benigni, managing editor of KFFL.com, on line one. Mike Harmon, fantasy guru at FoxSports.com, on line two. Dave Richard, fantasy football writer at CBSSports.com, on line three. And Kelly Perdue, the CEO of RotoHog, on line four. So while I have you gentlemen here, and it's for a limited time period because I know, Dave, that you've got to go at the bottom of the hour here, so let me not waste any more time. Turn our thoughts to this fantasy football season here from an overview type perspective. Previous segment, I talked about where we're coming from at FantasyDraftHelp.com as far as how we've got it going on here. Our top five that we got it slotted for this season: Adrian Peterson, Matt Forte, Steven Jackson, Michael Turner, Drew Brees. We're a little concerned about the workload issue with Michael Turner. Not enough to drop him lower than four. But again, right, let's talk about the overall dynamic here. Peterson seems to be almost a consensus number one. Turner's going one in a number of places here. There's a lot of other guys getting a lot of respect as well, whether it be Williams in Carolina, whether it be Jones-Drew. So just get a sense here of how you guys see the top of the round, the first round playing out. Corey, we'll start with you.
Well, we're a KFFL, definitely strong proponents of running backs. I mean, there's no secret there in the industry. I think across the board, Adrian Peterson is the number one guy. I don't think it matters what scoring system you're in. I'm going Peterson, 10 out of 10 times. Then looking down as far as the top five goes, I like Maurice Jones-Drew, especially in PPR. I like Michael Turner as number three. I find him interchangeable if it's a PPR league with LaDainian Tomlinson. I know a lot of people are down in LT after the last couple years of injuries, 30 years old, a lot of mileage. I think that he has just that one final year left in him to be a top-five fantasy back. And then Matt Forte at number five. You can make the argument for Drew Brees, depending on the scoring system, too.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of it depends, I suppose, on scoring systems as well. Mike, how do you see it shaking out for the top of the round?
Well, right now I'm on the Michael Turner bandwagon at the number one. I assume that the workload drops, and obviously in PPR leagues we shuffle things up a bit. He's going to go back a couple of slots. But, you bring in Gonzalez, who can block on the edge, and we've seen him do that for Larry Johnson in the past. So even though the touches may be down, I think you're still going to see big yards, because once he gets to the second level, he's gone, and he's still going to handle all the goal line work. So I think you're still looking at a huge year for him. Peterson at number two, again, last year 110 yards per game on average, the 10 touchdowns. Just a question of, does number four eventually show up? And I'm not talking about John David Booty getting the start there. So we'll see what happens there as to how they can stretch the field. Three, I've got MJD. 38 touchdowns is 3 years, and now the full-time guy, assuming that Torrey Holt catches more passes in the first quarter than any of the stiffs they signed last year, they'll actually have a little more of a passing game. Four, I've got Forte, and number five, I'm on the LT bandwagon as well. I think, you know, he's being downplayed quite a bit, and even though he was hurt, still went for 1,100 double-digit touchdowns.
Yeah, we've got LT at six overall, so I'm not far behind. It's good to hear that I've got company on this, because it seems to be fashionable to play the card of, oh, no, he's 30 and Darren Sproles and everything like that. It's good to hear some people agreeing with my sense on this. Line three, Dave Richard, let's get your sense. How do you see the top of this round playing out? Clearly, it's not a 100% consensus that AP would be the top guy, but how do you see the top couple of picks going?
Well, you're right about it's not consensus with AP, but it is at CBS Sports. We definitely have Adrian Peterson number one. Everybody's made great points about Peterson so far, but the points that I'd like to make are that, number one, he's got an amazing schedule, hands down the best schedule in the NFC. A lot of easy opponents this year. He's got Baltimore and Pittsburgh. That's about as tough as it gets for him. One of those teams is actually going to be at home. Speaking of home games being in the Dome, Adrian Peterson has played some great ball there. 11 dome games this year for Adrian Peterson, so weather won't hold him back. Other elements that might alter game plans or whatnot, these are things that aren't going to hold him back. Plays in a soft division. He has done a great job against the Lions, great job against the Packers, and he has throttled the Chicago Bears in every single meeting he's in. I look at Adrian Peterson as having an MV-type year. He's my number one guy. And just like I believe it was Corey who said that MJD and Matt Forte are interchangeable at 2 and 3, they're neck and neck, call it a tie at number two. And both of those guys tend to go ahead of Adrian Peterson in PPR drafts. I've got Michael Turner at four. I am concerned about the workload dropping a little bit. I'm also concerned about Matt Ryan throwing the ball a little bit more than he did last year. Tony Gonzalez comes in. Mike made a great point about how Tony Gonzalez...
And unfortunately, I think the way it's going, Dave, I think we lost you. All right. Unfortunately, that was we were hoping to get one more question in with Dave Richard, but apparently not to be. So we want to thank him for coming on, and that is unfortunate that we didn't get a chance to ask him one more question at least. But all right, Kelly on line four, Kelly Purdue, CEO of RotoHog. Let's turn the question to you in terms of how you sense the top of the draft playing out this year. What are some dynamics that you think are in play with some of these aforementioned names?
Well, I'm the youngster in the crowd, and I don't profess to be a fantasy expert, although I am a two-time champion of my 12-team keeper league, so I get to talk smack to my younger brothers and buddies. But it's pretty close. Adrian Peterson, MJD, Michael Turner, 1, 2, 3, Jackson, LT, and then Brandon Jacobs, actually, Angela Williams.
Well, you know what? And that's very interesting, especially with D'Angelo Williams being mentioned there, because what I'd like to do is check with some of you guys and maybe follow up a little bit on some of the names that we've heard. I'm just going to put out some... it would be, I guess, devil's advocate points of view on some of these guys, and you guys can agree or disagree on some of these points here. Again, I see D'Angelo Williams. Again, he is a guy who you look at. Jonathan Stewart proved last year he wasn't ready to step right in right away, but he's obviously going to be a threat for any type of goal line type action, maybe more active in the offense. I think it's a decent bet than he was last year anyways, notwithstanding everything Williams did to grab the job for himself. Jones-Drew, I see as being somebody where we've never seen him have to deal with the kind of workload that a lot of people apparently are envisioning for this year. And I wonder if a Rashad Jennings might not be a nice sleeper to be able to come in as a big guy, potentially to not exactly play the Fred Taylor role, but at least vulture the guy enough on the goal line to be able to hurt him a little bit. So I look at a couple of guys like that and have some questions. Michael Turner, you know, again, the question about the workload from last year. To a certain extent, you could cite workload for AP also. I can't go far enough to drop AP from number one on our board, but as far as some of these specific sets of concerns that come in with some of the guys in particular, Corey, let's start with you on line one. Agree or disagree on any of these?
Well, you bring up valid concerns with all of the guys and everybody, even Adrian Peterson to some degree, probably, the least of all of them. Everybody has a concern. Everybody, right down the line, you can come up with something. But there are definitely a lot of reasons to be willing to take the risk on the guy like Maurice Jones-Drew. Sure, he's going to be encountering a bigger workload than ever before. But he's shown us enough in the past. 38 touchdowns in 3 years, as one of the other panelists mentioned a moment ago, that's elite production right there, and that's sharing time. They've upgraded their offensive line as well. Turner, you have a lot of fears. I don't think they brought in Tony Gonzalez just to have him block. You're talking about, Matt Ryan, he threw 434 times as a rookie. That has to go up. That has to be somewhere closer to 500 attempts. And obviously the ball's going to come out of somebody's hands and has to be coming out of Turner's at some point. Then you get into situations like Forte. Did they bring in, Jay Cutler to just stand there and hand off the ball? No, of course they didn't. Are they going to become a pass-first team? No, probably not. But there are just so many factors for every player that you have to weigh. It just comes down to finding the least amount of problems, the least amount of questions and concerns to make the safest pick in the first round. Because if you lose out on your first-round pick, chances are your season's down the drain.
Yeah, it can be very tough. Last year I had Tom Brady and was fortunate enough to be able to pick up Matt Cassel off waivers and made a pretty nice run. But that's the exception to the rule. Most years when I've had and I think for most people, most years when we have a first-round pick that either goes down or pans out horribly, that's pretty much all she wrote. Mike, why don't you take a shot at this here? Any of the counterpoints that I mentioned on any of the players here? I know you've probably got some strong points of disagreement on at least a few of the guys I mentioned.
Well, I think with a few of the guys, we talk about Cutler, we talk about Ryan, and so forth. Well, now you've got a balanced offense, and you've got a guy that, is going to be able to help move the ball, stretch the field. I was out at Bears camp. Earl Bennett's already, picking up the offense. They spent a lot of time together this offseason. Joaquin Iglesias coming in as a nice secondary guy over the middle. That's just going to open up more room for Forte, and he's still going to have his goal line plunges. Likewise, you mentioned the offensive line, for Jacksonville. Well, they were hurt all last year, so you get that back as well. So, I'm not as, fearful of them. I think the one guy that we mentioned earlier in Steven Jackson is probably the biggest wild card of all of those top six or seven guys, just because two straight years he's been hurt. The offensive line has been dismal. Mark Bulger's been hurt quite a bit. You've got some young receivers there. He still goes over 1,000 yards last year and played very well when he was capable, but are all those hard hits and running square on and trying to bulldoze people like Brandon Jacobs, how much does that take out of him? So you've got him, and then D'Angelo Williams finally. Jonathan Stewart still goes for double-digit touchdowns, and he was hurt much of last year. So I've got to think that he comes in and starts bolstering a little more of that workload as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. And, Jackson, in particular, with what he's done previously versus the disappointment of the more recent past, that's one of the more interesting guys in terms of potential ups and downs here at this point. Kelly, let's take it from your perspective here. As far as any of these guys that are a little bit trickier to figure, whether it be Williams, whether it be Jones-Drew, even Steven Jackson, whose name was just put out there, Michael Turner, any agreement or disagreement on any of the points that I made on any of these guys and where you figured where you think they may be a little safer than I potentially thought they were?
Well, I actually thought that Matt was a little lower. I think that Jay Cutler's impact in Chicago would be absolutely dramatic. And while it can open the offense up more, most of the offense is going to be in the air. Even with his incredible ability, I think that he drops significantly from what people think he is. Steven Jackson, the key point there is him staying healthy, but he does have a significant amount of upside.
Yeah, that's true, particularly in light of what was done previously. All right, well, let's take it from the standpoint here of the question I'm sure gets put to all of you guys whenever you're in any kind of social circumstances with friends or family, with people wanting to pick your brains. I was at a cookout over the weekend, and Somebody was asking me who I thought for a sleeper for this year. The one that I put out there was Kevin Walter, just because I thought it was a little bit sort of underappreciated what he did last year versus, you know, you've got that offense that's continuing to evolve in Houston and continuing to come along. And even if he does, even if he comes up a little bit short of what he did last year, I think that would still put him ahead of a lot of projections this year just because he seems to be kind of underappreciated. So that was like a moderate to deeper type sleeper that I produced under those circumstances here. Guys, let's take it around here in order again. Let's start on line one with Corey. What's your thoughts for a sleeper for this year?
Well, we'll stick with Houston. I am absolutely enamored with Matt Schaub. I can't get enough of him. Everybody was all over Matt Schaub last year, and for the second year in a row, he missed five games. He comes out this year, he's rededicated himself to staying healthy. He has all of the weapons. Houston discovered a running game last year with Steve Slayton. I mean, their offensive line played above their heads, but there's really no reason to suggest that they couldn't play at least, you know, as close to as well as they did last year. Most people don't realize that Schaub last year was on pace for 4,426 passing yards. If he can bring his touchdowns up into, like, you know, 22 to 24 range and keep his interceptions in the mid-teens, I mean, you're looking at a top-10 fantasy quarterback that you can get in the 7th, 8th round. I've even seen him go in the 9th round in a couple of drafts. So you're looking at a situation there where you have a player who could be, you know, very, very good for your team. The only caveat is make sure you back him up with somebody that's safe. I mean, try and grab somebody like, I hate to use the term safe with Ben Roethlisberger, but at least you have some idea what you're getting, you know?
Well, you know what? That's a very interesting point. Let me ask you a quick follow-up. Would you advocate, essentially under the circumstances, knowing that you can get this guy as a number two, would you advocate trying to get another safer quarterback ahead of him? Even a guy like McNabb, who projects as a one, but you can probably get later than you could get Breeze or Peyton Manning or whatever, would you project trying to get Schaub as a number two, or would you advise maybe being a little more aggressive just to make sure you do get him?
I can understand the logic behind that. I just personally won't do it because I'm so sold on my projection that I'm willing to, you know, live or die by that. And if that means that I'm going to concede some by taking a safer quarterback before I take Schaub, I'm losing out on positional value elsewhere. I'm sacrificing at something, you know, the running back position or the receiver position. So I would rather just, live and die with my projection that I can get Schaub in the middle rounds and then make him my number one quarterback.
Interesting. Well, if it pans out, that's one more running back or wide receiver than you've been able to get in that spot. So that could really pay off for you there. Mike Harmon, fantasy guru at FoxSports.com. Let's take it around to you. Your thoughts on a prime sleeper out there that people should be paying attention to for this season.
One who, I guess, based on where he's being drafted, qualifies as a sleeper, but you hang a star on it is Carson Palmer, because we're not sure what's going on with the arm yet, even though we've heard nothing but great things. I mean, Ocho Cinco, babysits, whatever, he tweets, he catches balls. Lavernius Coles comes in to take over for Hoosh. You have Chase Kaufman, who's the first legitimate tight end target that he's ever had. Now it's just the Cedric Benson experiment from there. But the other guy I saw here in Cleveland, and it's just a... You know, the long shot in the final couple rounds, given Jamal Lewis's age, is Davis, the running back. Good speed into the holes. Looks like he can catch the ball out of the backfield. Built like a little fire plug. Looks like he could be a guy that emerges as the season goes on and may become one of those second-half players.
Yeah, that's a very, very deep sleeper, but that's what we've been hearing in this market. And you've just proved again that sometimes there's no substitute for being on the ground to be able to come up with something like that. Line four, Kelly Perdue. Kelly, anybody that you've got your eye on in particular here who's a little bit under the radar this year?
I'm Darren McKinnon. I know he was banged up here, but he didn't make his own plays, put up some numbers, and any, you know, even average back in the Denver system, even though it's a different system, I think they'll be ready to run. And of course, that was fantastic. So that could be another system.
Well, he's got the explosive potential, no question about that. On line three, we're welcoming back in. We appreciate that you're able to rejoin us here. Dave Richard from CBSSports.com. Dave, we'll put the question to you that we've put to everybody else here. Thoughts on a fantasy sleeper for 2009?
Rick, good to be back. Yeah, one of my favorite sleepers this year. In fact, I told my co-writer, Jamie Eisenberg, today that I'm quickly growing fond of him. It's Fred Jackson, the running back in Buffalo. I'm not sure if everybody else on the panel has said him or not, but this is a guy that you can draft late, guaranteed starter for the first 3 weeks of the season. I know Dominique Rose is there. I don't care. The Bills love Fred Jackson. They're going to find a way to use him even when Marshawn Lynch comes back. I'm not convinced Marshawn Lynch is going to survive the full, 13 games that he's going to have this year after his three-game suspension. I think you can draft Fred Jackson whether or not you draft Marshawn Lynch in the early rounds. This is a great late-round pick that people could have, especially in PPR leagues. I think he's got a shot at 40 catches this year, and I'm in love with the guy. I really think he's going to just blow away everybody's projections.
Interesting. That's a deep sleeper there. Well, everybody was kind of dispersed on their different opinions here. Dave, for the next question, I'm going to put it to you first because I know we're already running into overtime with you as far as your availability here tonight, so I'll start with
you. Don't worry about it, Rick. Don't you worry about it. I'm sorry I got disconnected there, but well, I'm glad to be here now.
Well, no problem. I'll start with you here on this one because, again, like I said, I know that, in particular, we knew that your availability was going to be a little more limited tonight. The next question would be, I'm just going to go back to state of the industry here for a moment because I know this is one that our producer, the FDH New York Bureau, would very much like me to put out there. And that being, as far as it seems to me that this industry, much like other ones, as it gets to be more popular, as there get to be more commercial considerations involved, you sometimes run a risk in with the analysis being put out there potentially being watered down in the form of entertainment, what it takes to keep it compelling. And this is not exactly a hypothetical analysis, but just that, again, we've had some, and it's unfortunate because the criticisms have been taken kind of poorly by the principal involved in a way that we didn't really mean it to be. But we've had what we think are, at FDH, are some legitimate concerns about some of the precepts being put forth by Matt Berry on ESPN vis-a-vis definitive statements like never take Terrell Owens no matter what, which doesn't leave any room for what if everybody else in your draft is listening to Matt Berry and he's available in the 10th round. Are you still saying to pass on him? So as far as things that basically seem to be coming more from perhaps an entertainment point of view and sort of not looking at the nuance of the real world and draft situations. And there's nothing, if not nuance, in drafts and auctions and things like that. So without inviting anybody to take any, I'm not inviting anybody to take any shots at anybody or anything like that, but just to get general thoughts about balancing the line, particularly with some of the more prominent voices in the industry, between compelling analysis that people are going to pay attention to, but not necessarily going too far in the direction of entertainment to where it loses a little bit of its bite. So I would start with you on this one. Dave, take your shot on that.
Well, first of all, let me say that I don't think there's a more prominent fantasy sports voice out there than Mr. Berry. Everybody can see him. He's very visible. ESPN's done a great job of putting him out there. But that's really all I'm going to say about him. I don't really have any need or want to speak of him further. All I can do is speak for myself and tell you that I take pride in being an analyst of football. I don't think that every single person, I think there's a general blanket statement that you can make not only about fantasy football analysts, but people who play fantasy football, that they think that anybody can come in and do this job. And I'm sure that anybody could come in and, jot some names down on the paper, say this guy's going to be a sleeper, this guy's going to be a bust, I think he's going to have a good year. But I think the majority of people that follow football and play fantasy football don't know the intricate details that go into football. You guys have no idea. I mean, maybe you do, and I hope you do, how hard it is to run a play, mm-hmm. a football play. You're talking about coordinating 11 people all at the same time to do the same thing, and it's done by somebody on the sidelines. It's not decided on by somebody in the huddle. And to understand football, that's to love football, I always take the position that I'm a scout. My dream job is to be, a general manager on an NFL team. And I would love to, I relish the idea of looking at players, seeing their strengths, seeing their weaknesses, seeing how they fit in with their teams, and making a decision on how I think somebody's going to do. I watch film. I break down film just like, you know, you hear about Ron Jaworski and Merrill Hodge breaking down film. We do the same thing. And we really take pride in knowing our stuff, doing our homework, doing our research, and talking to people. I mean, we're analysts here. And my best advice to anybody listening who wants to become a fantasy football writer is know football, have respect for football, don't make, you know, snap judgments based on this guy's 30, he's going to stink, or this guy is his, you know, it's his third year in the NFL and he's a receiver, he's going to break out. Do not fall for those judgments. Make your own judgments. Watch the game, learn the game, respect the game, and then go ahead and form an opinion about a player. And I really think that that's what we need more of in this industry. I think we're getting it. There are some people who do this for a living who I really respect, and those are the people that I think are eventually going to be the voices in the fantasy football world, and people that the average fantasy football fan, the guy who's an accountant and can't follow the NFL full-time, he can trust those fantasy guys because they're football people. They're people that understand the game of football.
Very well said, and that's, I think, the general point that we've been making, and you addressed it very well in a way that didn't take any shots at anybody, because, again, we've addressed it in the past in the sense of the bigger mouthpieces out there, people tend to associate with the industry as a whole, and we all kind of get tarred with things that may get said or advice that may be a little bit too show busy in nature, and trying to talk about the more substantive aspects of the business. Dave, you know, it's going to be a hard act to follow for the other gentlemen here, but I want to get their thoughts as well on this. Corey Benigni, managing editor of KFFL.com. Corey, your thoughts on this as far as the business, as far as the responsibility of the folks in this business to balance, again, I think responsible commentary with, again, what they feel they have to do to get themselves over and be entertaining, and what that balance is.
Well, first, I'd like to thank Dave. That was an excellent response. I really can't say anything better myself.
Anytime, Corey.
I've been in the fantasy industry since 2002. I've been with KFFL the entire time. I have seen a lot of growth in the industry. I've seen a lot of growth within KFFL itself. And one thing that comes back is we wouldn't still be here. The company's been around since 1996, and for the majority of our life here, we have been, you know, relatively a mom-and-pop shop. We would not be in existence if we weren't doing something right. We would not be in existence if we weren't taking the time. And like Dave said, the pride, that's where it comes from. The long hours, you know, all of that stuff that goes into it, that while it seems grueling at the time and you're not really happy with it and you have to explain to, you know, your better half, you know, why you're working until 10, 11, 12 at night sometimes, things like that get in the way, may cause headaches here and there. At the end of the day, once you see the fruits of your labor, you realize it is worth it, because you know that something as simple as nailing a sleeper for even a given week, something like that, and then you get an email back to you or a telephone call from one of your subscribers or viewers that says, you know what, thanks, great job, I played that guy over a more prominent name and I won my game because of that, or even better, I won my league because of that decision. I mean, those are the little things that you can hang your hat on, and you know, it makes you feel better about what you're doing. I think the biggest problem on the negative side of things is the Internet. I mean, for as much as a wonderful tool as it is and as much as it's done for the fantasy sports industry, the Internet is also a problem to some regards, because you get people who, as long as they have access to allow their voice to be heard, they can say whatever they want and somebody is going to listen. And the problem is rumors and lies spread faster than the truth. So, you know, you get, you know, stuck in situations where you're finding yourself defending an opinion that isn't even necessarily a valid one to begin with, and you're just trying to dispel a rumor that shouldn't have ever, you know, happened. And that gets frustrating after a while, because you do see guys who do it right in the industry, and, you know, you do realize that they take just as much pride in their work as you do in yours, and that's why they are also still around putting out the quality content that they do.
Well, also, Corey, very well said on your part. I think it does go to, you know, the pride of a job well done. Mike Harmon of FoxSports.com, let's get your thoughts on this here. Again, Fox Sports being a, you know, pretty big megaphone right there. The responsibility between, again, obviously one has to make one's commentary and analysis compelling, but again, not to do it in a way that sells out the integrity of the work itself. You know, how do you see that balance coming into play, both with yourself and anybody else in the industry where you've seen this potentially be an issue? Mike? Think we, okay, apparently think we may have lost Mike Harmon on line two. Okay. All right. So, yeah, and I'm getting a note here that he is off. Ooh. And unfortunately, I think we dropped Dave Richards as well. So that drop was our fault that time. So let's skip ahead here to Kelly Perdue, a CEO of RotoHog. Again, what you guys are doing, you're coming at it from a really interesting place in this industry with some of the kind of compelling permutations that you're putting on fantasy sports. So for you guys, it's more so the game presentation that you're putting out there. But what are your thoughts on industry analysis? And again, what we've talked about in the general sense here, the responsibility to put out a well-reasoned point of view versus the knowledge that it has to be compelling to at least a certain extent.
Well, I think you've framed the question great. There's a tension between wanting to entertain and grow the fantasy game space with being very professional and precise and specific and taking pride in the delivery of content that everybody's worked so hard to develop. You know, anytime you want to grow something and reach a larger audience, you're going to have to somewhat entertain. And the reason we're close to 3 million players right now is because it is very entertaining. And the thing I like about fantasy sports, and I think the whole original precept of being able to manage the team yourself, you kind of self-select. You play in league. So the expertise level and the respect or appreciation, you know, all of the hard work that you guys have all mentioned that go into analysis and understanding, I think the level of the end consumer finds whatever it's looking for. If they're just purely looking for the entertainment value, they go to those that are entertaining. If they really want the, you know, massively in-depth mathematical analysis based on, you know, every single permutation, they're going to find those people, and the web, as was mentioned, is the tool that allows for that to occur. So I think it's tough to say we want to grow this to be huge, make our livelihood off of it, and not want anything to do, you know, what happens occurs, which is entertaining. You may pull people in initially to the entertaining component and then get them into the much more significant and that analytical underbelt, which is where I personally think it's really exciting about a fantasy sport. So it can cut both ways.
Well, great thoughts there, Kelly. I mean, you just showed your business background, I think, to a tremendous extent, talking about the end user, because that's who we all, I think, need to be focused on in this business, the people out there that are taking in the work that we're doing. I think your point is very well taken. The more we think of them, the more we focus on them, the better off we're all going to be. Let's bring back the other two guests here. What happened was, I believe Mike Harmon's phone dropped. And unfortunately, when I dropped him off of the phone lines here, that also dropped Dave Richards due to our phone system here being what it is. So we'll bring back Mike Harmon on line two, Dave Richard on line three. Mike, you're the one guy we haven't put this question to yet, so we'll go around to you. As far as this industry goes, and again, from sitting at your perch at FoxSports.com, Fox Sports is a pretty big megaphone here. Talk about the thoughts that there are, whatever tension that there may be in this whole notion here between, you know, the infotainment aspect of this business and trying to reach people and trying to do it in a compelling way versus doing it in a way that doesn't sell out the integrity of your work. Talk about that conflict, if that's something that you've ever felt or observed in other people.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that you walk the fine line, because at the end you're trying to entertain folks, but you don't want to become a one-line joker, even though every once in a while one may be appropriate. You know, some of the stuff, you know, the off-field stories lend themselves to a lot of punchlines, and I think, you know, we have to make sure that we keep some sort of journalistic edge as we look at it, but at the same time, you know, we're trying to appeal to a very large audience, many of whom, you know, will go for the sophomore humor on occasion. Or more than one occasion. It's definitely a balancing act that you try to follow, you know, the bridge between the fantasy and, you know, reporting on the real game. I mean, because we're projecting just in the same way that any of the other studio analysts that don't take the fantasy spin are. We're just breaking it down to individual players. So, you know, you walk the fine line. Some of the stuff, you know, at Fox, we go a little bit on the edge. You know, one of our big sponsors for football this year is Hooters. As a result, you're going to bring in the Hooters girls, but you try to still treat your topic respectfully. you know, and try to give a little bit of entertainment without, you know, downplaying the fact that you're still giving out sound draft advice and player picks. So I think that's one of the balances we all, high wires, we all have to work off of. And at the same point, you're still trying to get your advertisers and sponsors involved and trying to appeal what their markets are. You know, you can't leave large dollars on the table in this economy. I mean, as Kelly will tell you, you know, that's one of the things. You're trying to work with each of your potential clients and figuring out who their customer is, figuring out the demographics there, and then seeing if you can fit the package without, you know, sabotaging your own brand.
Very well said, yeah, because and the Hooter girls might be a good balance for it. That's a way of, you know, you add a little bit of sizzle to it, but you're not sacrificing, you know, the actual substance of what you're talking about. And where we've been the most critical at FDH have been when we felt that there have been outlets that have sort of sacrificed the substance to try to reach people. The Hooter girls don't do that in any way at all. Final question I'll have to put to everybody, and it's been so great having all of you on the line with us here tonight. This has been a tremendous success. Having all of you on, as far as what people are getting from this, people are getting a lot of great stuff from you guys, and we definitely would love to do this again here. Just like to get some overarching thoughts on the 2009 season from you guys. I was referencing our draft guide prior to when you guys all came on the show here with some overarching thoughts for the season being. I'd like to get any of your takes on any of this. The way that it seems that, again, if you're looking at it on a gut level, the first round or two, you should not expect to feel good about those picks necessarily. That because of running back splits and everything like that we've seen in the last couple of years, it's almost apples and oranges to compare the top two rounds maybe to what they would have been at the beginning of the decade or even in the 90s. But it seems to me in rounds 3, 4, 5, maybe even 6, and particularly at the wide receiver position this year, it seems like you've really got a chance to clean up beyond that. You may not feel great about the first two rounds in your gut, but in the next several rounds, if you draft well, you can put together a great nucleus. So I'd like to get some thoughts on that, agree or disagree. We'll start with you, Corey Benigni from KFFL.com.
Well, I think, like, just the 30,000-foot view here, however you say it there, if you want to look at it as an overview, I'd say that the quarterback position right now is one where, in years past, I always felt like I need to get a quarterback relatively early. Now I feel like I can wait. I don't, you know, feel that pressure to grab one. And outside of a couple of, high-profile names, you're not looking at much more than a few other guys that all fit into the same general tier. Running backs, maybe it's the product of running back by committee, maybe it's a product of more successful receivers. Running backs are deeper than they probably have ever been. In the past, I used to always go 2 running backs to start my draft. Sometimes I even went 3 running backs, and now I think I'm drafting at, you know, most 2 running backs in the first, you know, 2 to 4 rounds. And I just find better value at the 3rd or 4th running backs much later in the draft. And receivers the same way. You're seeing, I mean, every year you always see receivers go, you know, a couple in the first round here or there, and you're seeing a lot more now. You're seeing, you know, 2, sometimes 3 guys going, and sometimes as high as, you know, 1, 2, 3. And I'm still not crazy about that because there's so much that could go wrong. But again, wide receiver in the top 36, you're almost guaranteed a quality number 1, 2, and 3 receiver if you draft smartly. And then beyond that, tight end is probably the deepest position in the draft. And last year, you know, the last couple of years you've started to see that. And last year was pretty prominent. But just from the high-level point here for drafters is just don't get caught up in, you know, a lot of the runs and the trends and things like that. And everybody wants to constantly find the diamond in the rough. And every year somebody pops up that nobody expects. But it's a guy like a Fred Jackson, for example, last year. It was a nice complimentary player, but absolutely nobody was considering him to be a legit fantasy guy coming into the season. Don't get so worked up in trying to find these guys. A lot of the times they just fall into your lap and there's really nothing you can do about it.
Absolutely. Very good points on all of those. Yeah, I've been saying this for years. You have to go for explosiveness early on. Positions be damned. You go for explosiveness in those early rounds. You cannot afford not to. Line 2, Mike Harmon from FoxSports.com. Agree or disagree with any of the points put out there from Corey and myself?
No, I think you guys are dead on. I mean, it's a changing game. I mean, the field's a lot different. I mean, we're also seeing, you know, more acceptance and a shift towards the PPR scoring, which is different from years past. So you're seeing more wide receivers in the first 3 rounds, I think, than we've seen in the past. And given the split workloads and the vultures across running backs, people aren't as enamored with the RB concept unless that second, you know, surefire starter like a Clinton Portis suddenly falls into their lap in the middle of the 2nd round. you know, quarterbacks, you know, five or six guys coming off the board. And then, you know, again, as we talked about, guys like Schaub and Palmer and all these guys are going to be available five or six rounds later. So if you don't grab, you know, the Warner, the Manning, the Brady out of the gate, you're still going to find a very solid quarterback several rounds later. So I think the tiering, you know, draft charting as you come into your league's draft is going to be a lot more important this year, I mean, because it's a lot more wide open on a position-by-position basis.
I think it really is. Those are great substantive points there. Let's go to line three. Dave Richard from CBSSports.com. Agree or disagree with any of the points here on the sort of 30,000-foot view of the industry this year?
Well, you know, I agree with Mike. I think there is definitely a trend towards PPR leagues starting to take over. In fact, we've been talking about possibly adding that to our standard game next season. And I think there's a reason for it. There's definitely a movement afoot for wide receivers to play a bigger role in fantasy football. I made a big deal last year about round three being the receiver round, or round three is really the round where you want to go out and get that elite receiver. This year, it's round two. They've moved up. You're seeing Larry Fitzgerald picked pretty much in preseason drafts almost consistently in late round one. You'll see Andre Johnson after that. You'll see Randy Moss in there after that. People need to get receivers early this year because you don't want to deal with what's going to be left there probably after the 25th to 30th receivers off the board. There's going to be a lot of – you know what they're doing in the NFL? A lot of the offensive coordinators are tailoring their offenses. They've seen what people are doing at running back, and they're saying, maybe we can do this at wide receiver too. And I think it's even part of the reason why we just saw Amani Toomer get signed. I don't think there's necessarily a problem with Kansas City's depth position, although I'm sure some people would definitely disagree with me on that. I think that they want to get people who fill a certain role, and you might see Amani Toomer working on third downs only this year because he's got great hands and he can run a great route, and Matt Castle's going to know that he can hit him there. So not only are we seeing running backs being used for specific situations, we're going to start seeing wide receivers being used in specific situations, which is why it's important to go out and get one of those elite wide receivers when you can, not at the price of a stud running back, but maybe at the price of a good running back, a very good quarterback, somewhere in there. So I really think this is going to be a year of the wide receiver in drafts this summer. Guys, I got to fly. Rick, thank you so much. Corey, Mike, pleasure sharing the airwaves with you.
Well, Dave, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell everybody else at the end here, it's been a pleasure having you on. We'd love to have you back on sometime soon. Thank you. All right. That was Dave Richard from CBSSports.com. Kelly, let's wrap this with you. Get your thoughts on this here. Your thoughts on what RotoHog users are going to be looking at for this year as far as the 30,000-foot view, so to speak, here of the industry, how the fantasy football season seems to be shaping up at some of the major positions.
Well, at RotoHog, we really allow our clients, you know, the major entities like the Sporting News and Pro Football Weekly and the likes, to figure the gameplay however they want. So we don't direct that. I like a lot of the comments from before. I agree on the, if you miss one of the top two, three quarterbacks, you can wait a long time to pick one up. The emphasis on points per reception obviously radically impacts a Michael Turner, who may have a half a dozen catches over the year, but really impacts, like we talked about, Steven Jackson, a wild card. You throw in points per reception for him, and he goes way up. So it was a Frank Gore, like. And then really trying to stay away from running backs, running back by committee mode. And if you can pick off one of those, that's the surefire all the time back, it can really help a lot. Again, I'm the youngster in the crowd. From a prognostication standpoint and the analytical standpoint, we really are about delivering a game for our client that the end consumer really likes to play.
Well, it's a very interesting product that you have there, and I'm going to address what I'm saying here to all of you guys, as I did to Dave, that it was a pleasure to have all of you on for this first summit that we had here. I think it was very informative for the listeners out there. That's what we were looking for. We wanted something very substantive because that's what we really, really treasure. You guys brought a lot to this. We'd love to have all of you guys back at various times here to catch up on the fantasy sports industry. Thank you all so much. Corey Benigni, Managing Editor of KFFL.com, Mike Harmon, Fantasy Guru at FoxSports.com, Kelly Perdue, CEO of RotoHog. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. And like I said, we'd love to have you back.